I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. What's really wrong with segregated schools? They lack racial and often social diversity, but the problem might be the way segregation affects how students learn. A new study has found that when minority enrollment climbs above 2/3, reading levels sink. Kirsten Kynes is a senior research associate at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She authored the study. Also with us, Antonio Coleman. He's a teacher at Parkside Elementary School in Atlanta. Parkside is mostly Black. Most of the students there are also lower income. But that hasn't stopped their academic progress. Antonio and Kirsten, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kirsten, your study shows that reading development is strongly influenced not just by teaching techniques, but other factors. Can you explain?
That's exactly right. This is a study of the tangled adversity experienced by children whose families have low incomes, and I allowed for child and family characteristics, as well as classrooms and school characteristics, to be associated with children's reading development. And in brief, there are moments along a child's developmental pathway where classrooms and schools have the power to really affect children's development, that is, either enhance it or constrain it. And that's really the bottom line of this study.
Give me a very specific example of what you mean.
Well, for instance, attending a classroom where the percentages of struggling readers or those children who are reading below grade level is higher is associated with constrained performance, whereas attending a classroom where there's balanced literacy instruction in the classroom is associated with enhanced performance. The finding that I think is most relevant to our discussion today is that along children's developmental pathways, attending a school that is minority segregated, and your definition was exactly correct, is associated with constrained performance. And I want to be really clear when I say that we can't derive any causal implications from this research. Minority segregation isn't causing constrained performance. Instead, when we look at a national sample, this is a pattern that we find. And I'm very hopeful, listening to your other guest, Mr. Coleman, today, to listen to how it is in schools we can disrupt that pattern.
Antonio, you are known for disrupting that pattern. I want to talk about how factors like home life, the number of slow readers affect your classroom. But before that, I want you to take me inside your classroom. Pretend I'm one of your students. How would you greet me when you first see me?
My first response to you would be to smile and extend my hand to you and extend the warmth to you that's going to be available to you throughout your adventure in my room. And I describe it as an adventure because that's exactly what it's going to take to get you to believe that you can do it. When you come in as a student, you'll instantly feel the freedom of the atmosphere. There's a lot of wide open space, and there are a lot of visual manipulatives in place, and a lot of space for you to do what you like to do. And that's because I know how you like to learn. And
now,
my belief that...
take me forward a little bit more. Your teaching skill has been described as basically aggressively teaching students to be analytical. So let's say that we're going to study slavery. Just really briefly, how would you introduce the topic?
We're turning off the lights. We're going to take a journey, and we're going to venture back to life before colonization, and it's going to be in the form of a time capsule. We're going to go back in time, and we're going to latch on our helmets, and we're going to crisscross our seatbelts, and we're going to blast off. And the blast off is going to be to the tune of the kids' voices. So getting them all excited and into what's about to happen, the journey they're about to take, they're about to embark upon.
Thanks so much for that. That is really vivid. And Kirsten, in the context of what you're talking about, there's always going to be extraordinary schools under challenging circumstances. Do you have any research on what might help break the patterns that you're talking about?
Well, I have to say I feel very good about what Antonio was just talking about, because first and foremost, he is encouraging students to be thinkers. He is giving them their intellectual identities to start with. A big avenue in reading research right now is the focus on comprehension, because we recognize there's no point in being a reader if you're not thinking about what you're reading. And then, you know, translating what you're reading into thought, into speech, into written word. And so I do think, in terms of disrupting patterns, one, attending to all of the social cues that Antonio is talking about, making sure those children understand that they are welcome in the school, that they belong in the school, that they have intellectual identities, and that the adults in their lives are there to foster those intellectual identities. I think that that's primary. And then really attending to the implications of reading research in the classroom, that we don't want people just perfunctory decoding words. Instead, we want people to be thinking about what they read and thinking about what they write and doing it in authentic ways. And if that means reading and writing about a historical or current social issue that is important to you, we want to encourage that.
Kirsten, do you think that some of the things that you've seen in these segregated schools also apply to economically segregated schools that are all white or mostly white?
I think that's definitely an issue that, I mean, I can't tell you that we've got findings in this research that support it, but there is a body of research that indicates, regardless of the race or ethnicity of the student body, schools where the percentage of low-income students are higher have students who perform lower. And so you definitely are tapping into a pattern that is supported by research, something that we really need to tease apart. And again, I refer to that phrase tangled adversity, because what I'm trying to do a little bit in this research is untangle some of that minority and economic segregation. But I do want you to know there is other research that would say it's economic segregation that is the more salient factor.
Antonio, we just yesterday profiled a program called Call Me Mister that's trying to increase the number of black male elementary school teachers. Do you feel there's a special rapport between black male teachers and black male students, or even between black teachers and black students? Or do you feel that that's not really important to the overall equation?
That's critical. It's critical because in many situations and in many instances, the children have no models whatsoever in their life in the form of a male. And so when they come to school, you represent for children a dad or a big brother or an uncle. And that admiration that they have for you opens them up to you, and it gives you the opportunity as an educator to pour in all of the knowledge that you can. And that's where our social responsibility comes in. It is a critical component of a child's development that they have teachers that they can relate to and that they know are there for them and have a vested interest in their success.
We're going to have to wrap up, but Kirsten, just very briefly, what impact will research like yours have on the ongoing debate from the Supreme Court ruling on voluntary desegregation? What do you think will come out of the kind of research you're doing?
Well, what I hope will come out of it is local school board and governmental attention to the way we carve out school districts within states, schools within school districts, and classrooms within schools.
Antonio, again, same question briefly. What do you hope going forward?
What I'm hoping for going forward is that the belief system of the people that are educating our children changes. And when I say that the belief system changes, I'm hoping that this trend can be turned around, and they can look at you can look at instances of success like in Atlanta Public Schools, where we have children that are excelling regardless of their socioeconomic status. And I'm hoping that they will look at these systems and try to duplicate what is happening. And I just honestly believe that it begins with a belief system that the children can do it.
Well,
it's
Kirsten,
a true belief system.
Kirsten and Antonio, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Antonio Coleman teaches first grade at Parkside Elementary in Atlanta, joined us from Georgia Public Radio. And Kirsten Kynes is Senior Research Associate in the School of Education at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, joined us from radio station WUNC.